Well, we have the partisan gridlock that people hate. That's why Congress is at an 11% approval rating right now. Look, I think the House probably has the better policy argument. Why would you want to do a tax cut for 2 months? How can you plan for a year when you only know you're going to get a two-month write-off? So they want to do it for the full year, and I think they're probably correct on that. On the other hand, this has been a very difficult issue to work out between the parties because of the offsets you have to find to pay for this tax cut. And so when you get 90% or 89 senators, including a vast majority of both parties, voting for something in the Senate to move this along, it's probably easier for the House to just take it, get some certainty, and come back and renegotiate. So I think although you can make the argument the House has the better policy argument, I think the politics or the optics of this probably go to the Democrats.
Well, then let's talk about how to offset it. What they were talking about, placing a fee on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to help pay for that extension. Is that a sticking point?
No. I look, there are a lot of sticking points on this. You have a sale of some broadband with. You have, federal employees, millionaires tax. There are a lot of things that have been thrown into the mix. They could only agree on 2 months, on cuts that would cover 2 months worth of, expenditures, tax expenditures in this case, and try to come back and renegotiate the rest. This shouldn't be hard. It's made easier by the fact that you're doing a year of tax cuts with 10 years of savings. When you start playing those kind of games, this shouldn't be that difficult. But this is Washington. This is an election year.
Why is it so contentious? Give us your insight.
Well, I think it's contentious for two reasons. First of all, we need to understand that politically, most members now don't worry about their general election. They worry about their primary elections. The way these congressional districts, particularly in the House, are drawn now, districts are drawn with a predisposition to be either Republican or Democratic. That means winning the nomination basically wins you the seat. A nomination fight, a primary election, does not reward compromise. It rewards you for being hardline, towing the party line, staying true to your principles, not compromising. And so the House, I think, has been a little less flexible in terms of what they're willing to entertain.
I see. So what is going to happen now if you have the Senate's already in recess, the House is recessing or has recessed, but they're still in town? So are they going to be able to get back together? And is that unprecedented for them to all come back during the holiday?
Well, they can always come back under a UC agreement or something. It's easily resolvable. I think what's going to happen now is members are back home with their families and their constituents, and they're going to wait and see how this blows in the press. Who's winning the press war? Who's winning the PR war? And then the party that is getting creamed generally will make some kind of concession and yield. But at this point, it's pretty high stakes. It's a stare down. Neither side looks like they're going to move. If they don't move before the end of the year, one side may get the better argument, but this, again, will do nothing to help Congress's image with the American people, which right now is an all-time low.
We are talking with Tom Davis, the Director of Federal Government Affairs at Deloitte & Touche. He was a congressman himself for quite a long time from Northern Virginia. And the White House is now saying that it's still not too late. So they seem to have some hope, too. You yourself just said this could be easily resolvable. Are we really just talking about angry political theater at this point?
Well, somebody has to blink. You have two competing proposals. One would take care of the tax cut for the year. The other only takes care of it for 2 months. But one has 89 votes in the Senate, and the other has a slight majority in the House. Somebody's going to have to blink. Because, in the House of Representatives, it's basically one party. The minority party traditionally does two things. It collects its paycheck, and it helps make up the quorum. It is majority rule. The Senate operates under a different set of rules where you basically need 60 votes to do anything, meaning you need both parties to buy in. So the Senate has a pretty bipartisan vote on this at this point, but that did not persuade the House to go along. Somebody has to blink at this point. If they don't blink before the end of the year, they can still make it retroactive and come in January and do it. But traditionally what happens is the side that wins the argument is the side that will not blink, and the side that's losing the argument will try to find some face-saving gesture to come back and compromise. But it may not be till after January, and you may have some people have money taken out of their paychecks until this
Well, let me turn the focus a bit toward the federal employee. They're wondering about their pay freezes, changes in federal annuity, things of that nature, and the different ways that they may wind up having to pay for this from their point of view in an unfair proportion. Give me your take on that.
Well, I think federal employees are getting hit hard. And I think if you take a look at where the country has to go, they're borrowing 40 cents on the dollar. This is for three straight years. You can't continue to run a government where you're borrowing 40 cents for every dollar you're spending. So something's got to give, and the federal employees are right in the crosshairs. What you need, though, is a broad-based agreement where you don't have any one segment that is picked on, whether it's millionaires, whether it's federal employees, whether it's entitlement programs. You're going to need a broad-based solution to this, which means both parties are going to have to compromise and stick it to their base a little bit to get the kind of agreement we need to get ourselves out of this rut. Federal employees will be taking a hit. I don't think there's any question about that. You just want it to be fair and across the board and kind of a shared sacrifice. And so far, the rhetoric has not been that way. Federal employees have been in the crosshairs of both parties.
What advice would you give them then? Just to hang tight, hold still, or what is it that they can do?
Well, I think a couple things. First of all, they keep doing their job. They do a great job. The anger that people feel toward the federal government is the laws passed by Congress. It's not the people that are sitting there over holidays, working nights, doing the job that they were assigned to do. We've got a great group of employees. In fact, I think the biggest asset we have in the federal space is our employee base. We need to continue to train them and reward them accordingly. But we need to understand in terms of tight budgets that almost every segment of the U.S. Government, economy, taxpayers, et cetera, are going to be taking a haircut as we try to right-size our budget over the next few years. We don't have any choice. We can't become Greece. We have seen what has happened in other countries. The problem we have today are that interest rates are so low that they keep borrowing money. It's just easier to borrow money than to make these tough decisions. When interest rates start to rise, as they inevitably will, it's going to put a lot of pressure on federal spending, on federal programs, and on taxpayers. And that is really where the rubber hits the road. So employees need to continue what they're doing, at this point, and to continue to talk to their congressional representatives. The delegations from the Washington area have always been very supportive, Republican and Democrat, and it's important you have advocates in both political parties so that when the deal is cut, you've got somebody at the table.
Well, then that brings me to my next question. You were in Congress for quite a long time. If you were there today, how would you extend that olive branch, reach across the aisle, and try to find some common ground?
Well, yeah, I was very lucky. I had members. I had Eleanor Holmes Norton in the district. Jim Moran and I had a great relationship. Henry Waxman was my ranking Democratic member, but I chaired the committee that oversaw the employee benefits. So I was in a position to kind of come through for us and make sure that if we got clipped, that it wasn't being done in an unfair way. And I was at the table to look out for them. We don't have that right now. And so as a result of that, I think that we get picked on unnecessarily. When I say we, I'm talking about federal employees. Contractors also have an issue. The fact that Congress has kind of cavalierly disregarded the October 1 start of the fiscal year each year, it doesn't get their budget done. Last year was May. Is just another indication of the fact that they either don't care or can't come to grips with the fact that you've got to run a government like a business. And starting getting your money in May doesn't do you any good in terms of planning for the year and being efficient in carrying out your mission.
And I have to ask, do you miss it? Do you miss being in the middle of the action on Capitol Hill?
You know, I left Congress undefeated and unindicted. I'm very proud of that, and I have just no desire to go back at this point. I wish him the best, though, and I try to stay active politically, but just not in the candidate's role. I got my life back at this point.